NAMU DJs John Barnes and Jesse Robinson had a chance to speak with John Flansburgh of New York-based band They Might Be Giants. They discussed the newly revived Dial-A-Song project, television, children's music, and the upcoming tour.
Yeah, that's awesome. You mentioned the videos. I know that you're doing a video contest associated with Dial-A-Song as well for the song Erase, which I believe is being judged by Frank Black of the Pixies. Is this correct?
That is all correct. That's going to be, I guess the submissions will be in a couple of weeks. The contest was announced a couple months ago, and I'm sure there are people who have been, you know, working diligently on their time-lapse video concepts since then. It's very exciting to have Charles be judging the event. I mean, basically, we've done a few video contests with John Hodgman judging, and it's for us, it's just nice to not have it come down to us being the judges. So we enlisted John, but then he was too busy to do this one. I mean, he takes the responsibility very seriously. I would assume Charles will take it seriously as well, but it's some of the video submissions have been amazing. I mean, the last contest we did for Am I Awake, just announced the contest as having three winners because we knew there would be too many really good video submissions, and there were. I mean, it was impossibly strong stuff. There's just a lot of creative people out there. And we're working with two of the previous winners on videos right now. For the Dial-A-Song service, so we're actually it's paid off big time for them. You know, they get to do another no budget video for They Might Be Giants.
That's great. I think your music videos over the years have been very popular in general. I think I was first exposed to your music through some of the music videos for They Might Be Giants songs that used to air on Cartoon Network when I was a kid. And then later, the first time I remembered hearing your music and going, oh, this is a They Might Be Giants song, was actually for a video you did for homestarrunner.com. Do you have anything to say about that or how you got involved with that kind of a organization?
Well, with Homestar, my wife is a huge Homestar fan, and she actually gave me a Homestar. She sent away and got a Homestar T-shirt for me, and I was wearing it at some in-store, and I guess the Homestar guys, somebody alerted them to the fact that I was wearing a Homestar T-shirt, and that probably confused them enough to want to collaborate with us. So it was a mutual admiration society, and
I think I actually had that same T-shirt. This is exciting.
Yeah, good one.
And you've done a lot of work for TV in general. I know Jesse wanted to ask you some questions about that. What did you have?
Well, I mean, as an actor and a media person here on campus at George Mason. It's always interesting to find out what's going on behind the scenes, and I know that one of your songs ended up as the theme song for the hit comedy TV show Malcolm in the Middle. I wanted to know what the process was like for basically a contract as far as, do you get a royalty fee for every time the show airs, or is it a one-time contract deal? You know what I'm saying, right, John?
It's traditionally rude to ask people about money, Jesse.
Well, I'm not asking him like figures. I'm just asking the process, right?
I'll just send you my tax forms, and you can put it posted online. It's a little bit of a shaggy dog story, you know. There's a tremendous there's a real necessity to just kind of cooperate with strangers in the abstract in show business, because that's so much about how things get done and how things work. And the Malcolm the Malcolm experience is kind of a perfect example of it. We got a call from the show's creator, this guy Linwood Boomer, who, when the show was, it hadn't even been picked up. It was still a pilot. It was just a pilot script, and Fox had greenlit making a pilot, which is really very distant from a show actually getting picked up. And it's very unusual for shows to have a theme written when it isn't even really in full production. But he actually had incorporated a couple of songs of ours into the script and really, you know, wanted us to be involved. And it was very interesting and kind of out of left field to have our material be featured on a television show that much. So we put together a quick demo of the song Boss of Me, really on spec. You know, we didn't get any money up front for it, just on the off chance that we would get the job. And then the show got made, and it took off, and it became a huge hit. And I think when... Let's track the money, because you got a money question. And basically, when the show got picked up and our song got picked up, we actually got a little bit bigger buyout because our manager said, you know, we were there for you and you didn't have any money. Don't tell us you don't have any money now that we've all landed the gig together.
He basically told them that they're not the boss of you now.
Well, I think they always were the boss of us, but I wouldn't say it was generous, but it was an okay buyout rather than like a brutally crummy buyout, which is not too atypical for television these days. I mean, it's, you know, licensing a recorded song, you know, can actually be like... Well, I mean, all this stuff sounds weird to talk about because it all sounds like a lot of money, but when you realize it's actually like your primary income, it might not be so impressive. But in any event...
Yeah, sorry to dig into the wallet there a little bit.
I think it's exciting.
John mentioned towards the beginning of the interview how he was first exposed to They Might Be Giants. And I had a similar type thing when I was younger, that I was first exposed to They Might Be Giants. My dad took us on a huge trip, a road trip around the country, and on one of the mix CDs had Cowtown on it. So could you please just explain to me the inspiration behind Cowtown, my favorite They Might Be Giants song?
Oh, you know, Cowtown is actually is probably the very earliest song that we worked on as They Might Be Giants. In fact, we played as a trio with this fellow Dave Lindsay, who's actually Arta Lindsay's cousin. I don't know if you know who Arta Lindsay is, but he was in a band called DNA. It was a very important New York band in the early 80s, part of this whole new wave, no wave implosion. But his cousin David was a stand-up bass player, and we jammed with him a few times, rehearsed with him a few times. And one of the songs we put together, John and I put together, was that song Cowtown. It's really Linnell's song, but I contributed some lyrics. But Cowtown is really like the original They Might Be Giants song. It's a pretty lighthearted song. I think the lyric that I contributed sort of vaguely inspired by 2001. A space odyssey, so it's pretty hard to explain.
Fine. Oh, that's perfect. You don't have to go further than that.
Speaking of Jesse's childhood love of your music, etc.
Oh,
you're a band that actually does children's albums as well as music for adults, and I think that's an important thing to do, is create children's media that doesn't talk down to children, because it's kind of tough being a kid, and people sort of forget about that. And I wanted to ask you about the children's music. Is there any more of that on the way? Are you done with that forever? Why did you do all the children's music? What are your thoughts on that in general?
Children's music is an interesting challenge. You know, I think it's sort of everything all at the same time. You know, there's so much about having a music career that is like, it's like you want a sip of water and you get a fire hose pointed at your face. These are the things that are great about doing children's stuff. Writing songs for children is just a great challenge, open-ended writing challenge, because unlike working within like sort of a rock music environment where you can almost feel like the walls are coming, you know, closing in around you just because of the music culture that you're working in, writing for kids is just the most optimistic, open-ended kind of writing you can do. You know, playing for kids can be very rewarding, just because you're often the first live music they've ever seen. You know, there are going to be people in the audience who are just going to be enthralled in a way that is just very different than a regular crowd. But it also works the other way. Like, you know, kids can be a brutal audience. You know, they can be bored out of their minds and make that fact extremely clear. I mean, it's as a performer, it's whenever people in the audience are just not even looking at you, you just feel a little neglected. The thing that's ultimately tough about doing kid stuff is how many people have preconceived notions that you can't do anything but kid stuff when you enter that arena. You know, I mean, after doing some kids' work, you know, we've released rock music that has really, you know, transgressive, messed up lyrics, and you know, people who obviously were introduced to the band through the kids' stuff will be kind of offended or mortified that what they consider to be family act to be doing this kind of offensive material. And that's a little bit strange, you know. I mean, it's strange for us just because we sort of feel like we've established ourselves to a certain extent and shouldn't have to sort of bend just to fit a category. And then there's also just this weird thing about doing kids stuff, which is having people trying to bring their kids into shows in bars at 11 o'clock at night and having to explain to people
That's a rough one. And the new tour is not for kids, right?
There is not a single show for kids on this new tour. So yeah, people get a sitter. If you want to see a show, just, you know, tell the kids we'll be around next time. Because, I mean, by and large, it's actually a little bit difficult to just even set kids' shows up. You know, they kind of have to happen on the weekends. And they have to be in sort of safe places. You know, you have to keep the amount of broken glass on the ground to a minimum. And in the most of the places we play, that is actually would be considered
a potential
unreasonable
hazard.
Yeah, it's an unreasonable request to think of. You know, many of the venues we play in have had particles of broken glass on the ground for the last 25 years, so it's not going to change.
Speaking of venues, this tour is coming through D.C. You're going to be playing on April 24th at the 9:30 Club, so people in the area can go look at that. What can fans expect from this tour? And then we'll get out of your hair for this fine morning.
Well, we're doing a lot of songs. We've been doing this monthly stand at the Music Hall of Williamsburg in Brooklyn and doing a lot of different sort of themed shows, doing different albums in their entirety. And because of that, we've sort of refreshed our repertoire on a lot of older material that we don't know that well, didn't know that well before we did the specialty shows. And so when it comes to, like, old chestnuts, I think we'll be pulling out some, you know, a more, some slightly less orthodox favorites from
some
the catalog.
Some deep cut They Might Be Giants tracks.
Yeah, some deep cuts, some, you know, beloved songs that you probably haven't heard in our live show before. And we also have all these brand new Dial-A-Song tracks that we're really excited about. And they just seem to be going over really well. I mean, it's a really exciting time for us, to be perfectly honest. You know, it's great. I love all these new songs, and just to be completely candid, there's this strange thing about how easily songs can kind of move from recordings into the show. And it is a bit of an acid test of the quality of the song. I remember reading an interview with Mick Jagger where he was saying that basically he knows a piece of catalog from the Rolling Stones is, he knows if an album is a good one or not if they've done more than two songs in their live show from it. And
that's a good litmus test, I think, in general.
Yeah, I don't think he's...
Sorry, we have to wrap this up. Real quick here. So I would just like to, again, thank you so much for doing this interview. We really appreciate it here at the station. People should go out to your show on April 24th in D.C. at the 9:30 Club, and everyone should go check out Dial-A-Song. You've been putting out some great stuff through that, and I will be continuing to put it out over here at WGMU as long as you guys continue to keep supplying them. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, fellas, for having me on the air. I really appreciate it. And thanks for spinning our records.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Take care.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.